episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, I'll tell you what. We got a sponsor this hour.
Fire it.
Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. And right now you can go up there and pick out a tractor and have it delivered and be all ready for spring. So go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Well, uncharacteristic of most of our shows, we've had people in the studio now last week and this week. It's so much fun. It's actually a lot of fun. We talk to people on the phone all the time. But Kathy and Officer Joe decided to come back and chat with us again because we had so much fun last week. And he sent me a bunch of songs from the Wayback. Some go to the Wayback Machine to, like, the 1930s. Apparently, they were potheads back then, too. And so we thought we'd play some funny music today.
Some vintage music.
Some vintage, yeah.
Yep. And some of it, actually, there's some kind of current-y stuff. So, anyway, I got an assortment for you today of new stuff, all new stuff. But this is such a big topic. I know we cover it a lot. And the danger is everybody goes, oh, my God, are they talking about pot again today? Yeah, we are, because it's so bad. And it's so in our face.
That's right.
That's the thing. It's just on us like a smell.
It is a smell.
It is a smell.
Yeah. I couldn't resist.
In fact, I walked out to the generator the other day, and oh,
it's back again.
The neighbors must be home.
Yeah, I'm going to be sad to leave that. It's one of those things that, honestly, the biggest thing that Officer Joe and Kathy and I work on is helping people in counties and cities who are facing elected officials who want to legalize it for the purposes of tax dollars and all that stuff. I mean, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Their intention might be good, but I mean, on the surface, it makes no sense. We're gonna sell drugs so that we can have better law enforcement. Okay.
I want to know. I'm going to put it out there. What community has actually gotten any money from the state?
Then there's that. See, it doesn't turn out like they think.
No.
But the tough part is a lot of times people don't know what to say. They don't know what to say, and their knowledge comes from maybe none. Maybe they didn't deal with it all ever. Maybe they were never even, you know, tangentially connected.
Well, what good has come from legalizing it?
Right. But they feel powerless and they don't have enough tools. So I guess we talk about this a lot so that people can listen and kind of load their mouth, you know, so when they go to something, they can speak with some, at least some authority. You know, this is all factual. We're not going to give you our opinion because none of us are doctors. Nope. None of us used to be a policeman. Is it? Does it go like once a policeman, always a policeman?
Yeah, I'm going to go with that today.
Is it like dancing girls or whatever? You know, there's other professions. I guess once you're in, you're always in.
I always profile people going down the road. I always carry them.
Once you're in the mob, you're always in the mob.
You're always in the mob.
So, Aaron, we're going to talk today about the many strains, that's a play on word, many strains of failure in the state's pot industry and the new article that just came out by Paige St. John, the LA Times reporter, who is pretty liberal, by the way, and has really
and yet
done.
Has been super fair.
Yeah, has been super fair
yes.
in her reporting.
Yeah, she moved up our list, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't always happen.
No.
When they write about it, a lot of times it starts to take that you know, that detour back to, but it'll be great.
And then I'm going to talk to you about Enresco Labs, which is a large laboratory here in California that tests specifically cannabis, and they're one of the very legitimate labs, and how they have tested over 80% of the dispensaries in Northern California, over 1,000 lab tests, and of those, the vast majority came back with harmful substances to the human body and brain, and we're going to discuss that, and I have a couple of studies to back that up. And then finally, we're going to talk about the pot dogs of Doris.
Oh.
And from
this, yeah, if you don't care about the chemicals, you don't care about the crime, you don't care about the environment, you don't care about the cartels, you don't care about any of that. The guys that are out there growing this, not all of them, but, you know, the big cartel grows, man, it not only decimates the wildlife, but, I mean, in Siskiyou County, I can tell you for a fact, they're killing and eating dogs.
They're in the freezers.
Out there in the grows, because they found them skinned and hung and partially cooked out there.
And in the freezers.
Yeah, what could go wrong? So, all right, where do you really want to start?
Well,
because we've got, like, uncharacteristically, we have like 9 minutes.
let's talk about, because a lot of our current politicians, one of their hot issues is always human trafficking. And did you know that 70 to 80% of marijuana in legal pot shops is cultivated by victims of human trafficking?
That does not surprise me, because you have massive amounts being grown here in Northern California, and you have tons of human trafficking.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, we can all go back to Prop 64 and the promises made. And one of them, you know, was going to, you know, we're going to reduce law enforcement costs. Hello. We're going to increase tax revenue, and we're going to decrease youth access. And the black market pot would go away.
We have about 750 dispensaries, legal dispensaries in the state of California, and Newsom envisions over 7,000. So that means a cannabis dispensary on every corner. And recently, as you're aware, Aaron, and maybe your audience is not aware, but last week, Newsom passed just about every single law that the marijuana industry wanted, that favored the marijuana industry, including, and this is important for your for people thinking about their rights being infringed. This is very important for counties, because Newsom is forcing counties now to put marijuana dispensaries in their counties. So even a county like Shasta, which has enacted specific ordinances against marijuana dispensaries, the state is going to attempt to negate that and try to place it all throughout California.
And the interesting thing here, because this goes against everything that you voted for in Prop 64, we had cities, municipalities, counties had the right to choose whether they were going to be on board with Prop 64 or not. And you're taking that away.
And any talk, because this was just a week ago, right?
Right.
Last week or the week before? Yeah, last week.
Right.
So there's probably no talk yet of people going to sue or, you know, any of that kind of
thing. No, not yet. Not yet.
So what we've seen with the Democratic legislature is that they pass laws. This is very Biden-esque and now Newsom-esque. They pass laws that potentially are in violation of the Constitution or a state versus county rights. They pass those laws and then see if they're going to sue. And you get a small county like Siskiyou, Shasta, Lassen, Trinity, any of the Northern California counties, you know, they have one attorney that represents the county. It's not like they can take on the state, which can use all of our tax dollars and throw the weight of the state against the county.
Well, and then the dope growers have, you know, they've got tons of lawyers.
Oh, yeah.
But they also have, you know, mad skills when it comes to that kind of stuff in a lot of cases, because they'll sue the county and they'll name, like, the district attorney and that sort of stuff, which means they now have to go to get outside counsel. So it's not just expensive, but it's more expensive for them to do anything proactive because they're busy defending themselves.
Well, and the pro-pot people, they got an endless supply of cash.
Where does it come from, Kathy?
Well, you know, the good thing, though, if there's a good
thing... Where did they get all that money?
Well, the good thing, Aaron, is...
Where is our wrong...
Because we all know that running a legal business isn't all that profitable, right?
No, well, we know, like, that guy down south, you know that guy we're talking about, that guy who's running a potential legal business, that's going to be all a cash business, and all that money is going to go out the back door. So what are they going to report to the IRS? Now, many of these people, they put someone who does not have a criminal history, because you're not supposed to have a criminal history, although they're starting to fight that, to have a cannabis license.
Yeah, but wait, I'm not actually screwing around this time. Okay, real question.
Yep.
wasn't the deal that they made the licenses easier for people who had previously been convicted of drug crimes?
That I don't know whether that passed or not. I have to look at the legislature to see if that passed.
Well, and they're trying to make it easier for the underserved populations because, you know, gosh, we need more pot shops in the inner cities.
And, yeah, because that'll help.
Well, yeah,
and that's going to totally game changer for everybody.
And the majority of marijuana dispensaries do go into inner cities in communities of color that can least afford to have more drug,
issues
yeah. in their area.
Yeah,
and that just is truly sad that it's so underhanded because people think, oh, well, you know, because we all know it started with. What do you hate people with cancer? You know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's not even. Yeah,
there was a song on your list, by the way, that was some weirdo deal from what's his name, the Rasta guy,
Bob Marley. Or
thank you. Yeah, whose name?
I love it, a ganja.
Yeah, whose name I can't even remember. And it was all about how it was a medicine, and I almost played it just for fun, and it was like, by the time I got done listening to about 2 minutes of it, I was kind of angry, and I thought, oh, yeah, I'm not going to do it.
Hold it. Let's talk about the medicine argument just for a second.
Okay.
Please. Okay.
Oh,
yeah, all right. Yeah. So when it comes to medicine and marijuana, let's look at it. Let's look at the evidence. And so medicinal marijuana, which is now synthesized into Epidiolex or Salvatex or Marinol, one of the legal drugs.
Mm-hmm.
That's used in about 3% of the marijuana population, and that's used for very specific conditions, wasting disease for people who have cancer, or very specific young people who have seizures, and it's proven to be effective. Now, I'm not going to sit here and preach to your audience. I think if somebody's in the end of their life and they want to use anything, I don't care. Use it.
Right.
Just,
you know. The idea that...
But don't tell me it's medicine.
Right. Don't tell us it's medicine.
Yeah.
And your freedom, it's always like this. Your freedom stops where my face starts. If you're in my face, you're blowing smoke on me, you've got the stink weed, you're growing it next to me, you're using all my water, you're bringing in people of ill repute into my neighborhood at all hours of the night, I'm going to be concerned about that. That's not going to be okay by me. But if you want to use marijuana responsibly, after we tell you what they put in it, and I tell you, I give you the study from Enresco Labs, and it shows all the stuff that's in it that's harmful to you, and that includes all of you that are rubbing that CBD, because we're going to talk about
that.
And the
hemp stuff.
And
stuff.
Yeah.
You're rubbing that on your body. You're rubbing heavy metals and all kinds of chemicals on yourself. None of it is FDA approved. And this is what's interesting. When we talk about, you know, they want to declassify and deschedule this drug, believe it or not, the industry doesn't really want to. Why?
Because the regulation.
The regulatory.
And to put it through an actual blind studies and to show the world that this actually works, they don't want that to happen because it cannot pass FDA approval. Now, they're trying. There's studies out there. There's the University of Mississippi that's growing marijuana for the feds to do studies. That's going on. And you know what? But it's been going on for years. And you know what, Aaron? If all of this today, they said, okay, we're going to reset. We're going to take all of this. We're going to take it down to the Central Valley. We're going to have these big greenhouses run by Canna Agribusiness, which is what's happening anyway, by the way, because marijuana is controlled by about 12 people in the United States. 12 very rich billionaires control marijuana. So if they wanted to grow it down in the Central Valley and we could test for all the chemicals, hey, I'm okay with that. And they want to put it in the cigarette packs and they want to put it in a locked box behind at a 7-Eleven, sure. And we can keep it out of the hands for our kids, sure, like cigarettes, but we can't. And the black market isn't going away, and there isn't anybody alive right now that's going to be around when any of this stuff starts to straighten out. The market is so saturated. We went from $1,000 a pound last year to the wholesale. We're down to $300 a pound here in California because we're so saturated. One of the bills.
That's why none of it's staying.
That's
here.
Why it's getting shipped out.
That's why it's getting
because
shipped out.
It's still $3,600 to $4,000 in other places in the United States once you ship it out.
Well, you're out on your family vacation, driving along, stopping at a rest stop or whatever. You too could meet people from the cartels in California.
And I believe you have a story about that. Heading up to Highway 299, don't you?
Heading up to old Susanville.
Yep.
There they were.
Yep.
I was like, hey, Bill, who's driving the minivan front and the back? My money's on enforcers.
Oh, you mean they had follow-on and layoff vans waiting for you? Yeah.
But you know, it's like around here anyway. I don't know how this works around the country, but and you should, you know, lots of people listen from elsewhere, obviously. So wherever it is you live, if you have a lot of illegal growing, you need to figure out what their vehicle of choice is, because that's really important, and how to spot the spotters. Those people that are going to follow you around to make sure that you're not the cops, that you're not, you know, going to go narc on them. And around here, it's dirty Toyota pickup trucks and little dirty minivans.
Hey, guess what?
So when you see a super, super dirty minivan, we're not talking like got busy with soccer practice and just didn't, you know,
forgot to wash the car.
Just didn't put the kids to work. Yeah. I mean, this is like,
out in the grows.
Yeah. You've been filming Lost in Space out in the desert. And
spoiler alert from, okay, how do we do the little news now? Okay, so from Highway 812 yesterday, they're now driving brand new Toyotas, and I mean brand spanking new Toyota crew cabs, and no longer do they have
one. They don't have the little ones, little two-seaters?
Those are going away. They're buying the full-size Toyotas now, and they've got two spotters in a van, because
they got a shooter and a driver.
They got a shooter and a driver, okay. And we know that last month, the LA Times reporter, who was taking pictures of or video of Grissette's illegal water distribution operation up there in Siskiyou, the four Hmong that stopped him and with a tire iron said they were going to shoot him and kill him.
Yep.
And then vandalized his vehicle, knocking his, you know, smashing his windows.
If you would like to read that in the New York or in the Los Angeles Times, I have posted that article on the website, because today is September 25th, 2022. You should go to the website. It's there in PDF form, which I'm sure is not what the Los Angeles Times wants me to do, but I really do want people to read it.
Oh,
and that firsthand account of what happened is right there.
And so they've updated that today in today's paper. The new article just came out, and Paige St. John is not done. She's going to start talking about the corruption and who's getting paid off.
See, I knew somebody would like this because it's a big story. It is a big story. All right, we have to take a really quick break because I'm totally tardy with it. Let's see. So the first song hails from 1932, and the second one starts with talking. So when you hear the talking, it isn't a commercial. It's part of the song, and it's part of the topic. So you're listening to We the People, and you can find us at We the People Radio.
.us, man.
You're fired.
You obviously didn't inhale.
Funny Reaper Man.
Reaper Man.
Oh, baby, Reaper Man.
Reaper Man.
If he trades your dimes for nickels and calls watermelon pickles, then you know you're talking to that Reaper Man.
Reaper Man.
Have you ever met Fun Reaper Man?
Reaper Man.
Have you ever met a funny Reaper Man?
Reaper Man.
If he takes wants to give you Pennsylvania, then you know you're talking to the Reaper Man.
Actually, as much as I would like to deny the fact that pot was the beginning of my usage of drugs, I mean, it's there as a fact. It was the beginning of my using of drugs. It was the first thing I touched in the drug field. I was told it was innocent by everybody that surrounded me, people that I looked up to as intellectuals and smart people. And they told me there was nothing wrong with pot. You would never graduate to anything else. Now I can walk up the street here about a block and see these same people, as intellectual as I thought they were, using heroin. I can't see myself ever using it again.
La, 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 pot. Pot, give me some pot. Yeah, what you are, you can be what you're not. Hip, hip, you wanna be hip. You know it all if you don't take a trip. Pot, pot, give me some pot.
Well, I was kind of surprised Neil Diamond was singing a song about that, but it was interesting because every piece of that song had somebody giving a firsthand testimony. And I thought, wow, how many times have we all heard that, you know?
Let me segue to my trip this week into Reading. And I did.
Can you use the word trip?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
And I want you to know that I'm now showing you my official media, and I am now official media, and I'm part of the Lens News Network, and that's the Law Enforcement News Network. And we are reporting now on the stories that others will not report on. So that's a little plug for Lens News. You're going to see more and hear more from them in the future. So this week,
we'll add that to the the pot tab on the We the People page.
Please, thank you. Okay, so this week I using my now new official media ID, I was down in the homeless camps in Reading. And I had the opportunity to go in there and interview some of the homeless. And it's funny that the gentleman that we just listened to, that when I started talking to these homeless people, who, by the way, were genuinely nice to me, and they were not threatening to me, and when they knew that I wasn't going to arrest them or harass them or do something to them, they opened up about their lives. And I heard just a sad story about their trip and pursuit into drugs and how that took them into being homeless. And
how many, like the connection between drugs and the homelessness?
One-on-one.
Okay. Oh. That's kind of what I figured.
Yeah. It's one-on-one. Yeah. So, and we talked about marijuana. As a matter of fact, when I was there, one of them was smoking a blunt. And if, for those that don't know what a blunt is you take tobacco, hand roll it, and you mix marijuana. When you don't have enough marijuana, you kind of mix it with the tobacco. So you get the, nicotine and the THC. So they were smoking that while I was there. Okay, no big deal. Tried not to breathe it in, you know, because I don't want to die. I don't want cancer.
You should test that Lens Media guy.
Yeah, right.
I think you might be a pothead, Fokker.
Well, hold it. Please tell your audience, how am I dressed today for you? How am I dressed? Do I look like Bob Marley?
Yeah, yeah.
A white Bob Marley?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, guys, I got my ganja hat on.
I don't think he wears glasses either.
When I wear, I'll put my sunglasses on.
He's probably younger. Oh, now you look legit.
Now I got the dark glasses.
Now you look legit.
When I came back from Weed, California yesterday, I stopped at the weed store, and no, they don't sell weed. They might out the back door, but they don't out the front door. And so they had this cornucopia of T-shirts and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I picked up a bunch of weed police hats for all my Met deputies. So all the Met deputies are getting weed police beanies from me. So I brought back a shirt, and it says, enjoy weed. And it's Weed California. It's not Weed the Marijuana, but it's in weed colors.
They've always skirted that issue. From the crossover.
Yeah.
So talking to these homeless, they've had babies out there. Many of them have lived out there many years, and they have mental health issues going on. But some of them said, I'm not crazy. I'm just homeless. You know, I had an abusive parent. I got kicked out when I was 14. I got on the streets. I got pregnant. I began to use marijuana, and then I started to use meth. And so for a lot of them, the trip from marijuana always goes on to harder drugs, meth or heroin. And that's what they're facing out there. It's funny because I asked them, I said, have you ever seen anybody from the city council out here? And they said, who? And I said, you know, we've got a person running, Erin Reznor. She's going to run for board of supervisors. Has Erin ever been out here and talked to you? They didn't know who she was. So it appears to me that perhaps maybe our city has not doing the job they need to do in dealing with our homeless. Well, other than cleaning them out. They do a good job cleaning them out.
No, I think they do. They try. Because when law enforcement does go out, they do go out with other organizations. So they go out with, you know, the Good News Rescue Mission people. They go out with the Hope Band. They offer these people resources.
The hard part is if you don't.
Yeah, but they don't want them. Right. They don't want to live somewhere where they have to follow rules. They don't want to be accountable to somebody.
Well, so, and you'd have to be interested in giving up your drug addiction.
Right. And, you know, it's like you can lead a horse to water.
I listened to one girl. I'm gonna oppose both of you. I listened to one girl, you know, and obviously.
Oh, I didn't know it was going to be like that.
No, it is. There's going to be opposition. I'm pushing back.
What the hell?
Yeah, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Look, I'm hardened.
We have a caller on the line.
I'm very hardened. Oh, okay, good night. I'm very hardened as a policeman, so I know my heart is not soft, but I felt pretty soft for some of these people when they talked about their lives. And the girl that I talked to, her name was Shannon. People will know her. She's actually a very pretty blonde. She was clean. She had her makeup on. She spoke to me, openly. And she said, you know, I'd like to go to college, and I don't know how to make that happen. I'd like somebody to help me, and I'd like to pull myself up out of here. Because I asked them all, I said, where do you see yourself in 5 years? You know, and a couple of them said, I probably will be dead. But she did not. She said, and then I said, well, how would you fix homeless in the community? And she said, well, and she pointed across the street over to the veterans, an old veterans clinic, and she said, I would have the city take that building over. I would turn that into small housing. We'd look at something like that. And she goes, we actually police ourselves out here. I said, how do you live? She goes, we do barter with other people. And I go, yeah, but there's people that steal and do lots of drugs out here and create a lot of mayhem. And she goes, not me. She goes, this is my family right here. And she pointed to four or five people around her.
So how'd she end up there?
Yeah. So her story was at 14, Her mom was an alcoholic, abusive relationship. Father wasn't there. She couldn't handle it anymore. She moved out. She began living on the street. And about 5 years later, she got married. And she had a stable life, and she had kids, and she was married for 6 years. And the marriage fell apart, and the husband kept the kids. Actually, I'm sorry, she kept the kids, but she was now living homeless. And so CPS, Child Protective Services, came and took her kids because she could no longer care for them. And so she now been living on the street. She's 39 now. So from 14 to 39, she's only lived 6 years of her life where she felt, she said, I've lived 6 years of my life where I'm normal. She goes, every time I walk out here, I walk up to the corner. There's these creepy guys that are always trying to get me to, you know, engage in prostitution. She said, it's disgusting. She said, I have to worry about being out here at night. She said, that's why I hang around with this very small group of people and try to keep myself safe. She goes, some of the police are really nice and they really try hard with us. And she goes, some of the other ones, they're pretty hard, you know.
So why not go to one of the myriad of places that is kind of set up to do that transition?
Yeah, I think she said she's tried on two occasions, and she said some of the rules became so onerous for her. She wanted to live, you know, a free life, and she just couldn't do it anymore.
And
I think that's part of the homeless condition, right? I mean, a lot of people feel that way. So for her, it's going to be bad. And so I think the cycle of drug addiction will continue. She wasn't high the day I was there. She was absolutely stone sober and very – and I've got her interview, and we're going to play that at some point, Aaron. I videotaped all these interviews, and including the gentleman who wouldn't give me his name, and he called himself AWOL, and he said he was wanted in four different states and that he was absconding from parole. So those people are out there. Those people are out there, too.
Well, that makes everyone feel better. It's like, oh, that's that is actually happening.
No, he's out there in our community. And that is, some of the homeless are that way. You know, they're criminals.
Well, the trick is, if it was just putting people in a house or whatever,
right.
But there's just so much more that has to be done because at the end of the day, how do they pay for everything? How do they?
Well, not only that, I mean,
who takes care of it?
And I have a friend that their church has been pushing for those tiny homes. And it's just, they get so much pushback from the city. It's like the city goes, yeah, let's do this. And then all of a sudden, there's all these rules now. And so what do you do? Like, we're trying, but what do you do?
Yeah, and you have to have rules. You can't just use everybody's taxpayer dollars, build a homeless shelter, you know, a housing development, and then say, have at it, guys.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that isn't
so
realistic.
Yeah, you're setting yourself up to
fail. Let's circle this back to cannabis and to marijuana.
Yes, please.
Okay, so the city, in its infinite wisdom, went against the Planning Commission when they decided they were going to put the manufacturing honey oil facility right next to the Good News Rescue Mission, right? So these people who are homeless, that's one of the things I mentioned. I said, don't you go down to the Good News Rescue Mission? And they said, yeah, we do. But, you know, when you walk down there and you walk from here to there, which is, what, a couple of miles? They have to walk down to the mission, and they go, you're starving, you haven't eaten all day, and they sit you down and they want to they want to talk to you about God. And I've been there, I've served at the mission, so I understand what that is, and that's a necessary part of the mission. But if someone's if somebody's starving, they need food, and
I've watched
some of the
brief.
People come in there that are just stoned out, you know, really stoned out. So that's sad. I left feeling that day with them, and I said I would report their stories to the Board of Supervisors, and I will. Over time, I'll report their stories, and I have them on videotape. And I also told them that I would come back and talk to them again, and I will. I didn't feel unsafe there. I felt, you know, after they warmed up, at first they didn't want to talk to me, but they saw the media badge and they said, oh, that guy's media, let's talk to him. So that really opened the door.
Sure. Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As soon as I went like this.
How did they feel that was a
good thing?
Yeah. Why was that?
Well, I told them I wanted to tell their story, unvarnished truth about their story. I said, I'm not going to gloss it over. I said, just talk to me, and I'll try to tell your story through your words, not mine. And they said, okay, you'll say what we're saying. And I said, yes, I'll tell your story through you. And I asked each one of them, I said, if you were to tell Aaron Reznor from the city.
Or any city or council.
Any city council, right? If you were to tell them, you know, what would you tell them? And it was funny. Most of them just said, hey, treat us like human beings. We're human beings out here. Just treat us like human beings. That's all we really expect. You know, We don't. They weren't saying like give us free stuff. They were going to just treat us like human beings. So,
did you see drug use when you were there?
Yeah.
Yes, I saw the guy smoking a blunt. You know, he rolled up a blunt and smoked it while I was there. So, yeah. But IV drug use, no. Using crack or using meth, I didn't see any of that. I saw mental illness. I saw a gal who is certainly, to me, in my judgment as a peace officer, would be somebody who would have mental health issues. Definitely mental health issues.
When we talk about mental health, too, because I need to tap on this, we get calls all the time about parents looking for help for their youth.
Yep.
All the time. Guess what? There is nothing. There is nothing local to help these kids with their addiction or mental health problems.
You would have, okay, so you're a, give me a, just because we all see stuff like this in movies, on TV, on the news. So just to be clear, I take from that, that a parent has a kid who's using drugs, doesn't come home, doesn't follow the rules, won't listen, and is a threat to the family. And is not 10 years old any longer.
Right.
And so they can't control them, physically control them. Maybe are they going to school or not going to school?
I think it's a little of both. A lot of the parents that call, they just don't know where to turn. And they know there's some mental health issues going on from these kids. And whether they lash out or not, I don't know. But they don't know what else to do. And so the only thing that we can point them to is public health. And there is just no help there for our young people.
So even if, because like he was saying, like if they went to the mission, they don't like maybe like all the rules, they don't like that sort of thing. This isn't a case of they don't like how it works. There just isn't an option.
Right.
Is it,
and it's really sad because you hear these parents on the phone and you just want to,
yeah.
Of course, then the mom and me is like, just bring them over. I'll tie them to the tree. I'll do it. We'll take care of this.
They can hulk them to my home.
Well, no, but I mean, it's it's hard as a parent. You know, it's hard. You want your kids to grow up, but yet, you know, this is what's out there. It's in their faces as much as it's in ours. Mm-hmm. And they're going to experiment with them, and then all of a sudden, you don't know what to do. It's gotten out of hand. And what do you do?
Yeah, and if the kid doesn't want any help.
Right.
If the kid, okay, so let's pick the kid who say, got some bad friends in
seventh grade.
Yeah.
Let's come on, because we're seeing it really young.
Yeah, I was going to say sixth grade, but okay, seventh grade.
Let's try seventh.
And, you know, gets into some stuff they shouldn't be involved in, and then kind of realizes, uh-oh, I'm in too deep, and
I don't know how to get out.
And I don't really want to be in this. Is there help for that kid?
Nope.
The kid who wants to turn it around, unless the parents can afford to send them to rehab.
Right. Right. Yeah, they're just, and it's not local. That's the sad thing is we have no local resources for our young people.
When does the service pick up? After 18?
Yeah.
Okay. So
when
if you're
an adult.
So if you're a minor, it's all on the parents.
Yeah.
Okay. So in your travels, I guess, through the Yellow Pages or wherever you go. Gosh. Really dates me. I know about Yellow Pages. Everyone in here knows about Yellow Pages.
This is rotary phones.
This is a senior community right here. Okay, so if
now there's counselors out there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, there are counselors out there for young people.
Now what about
the team? They are so overwhelmed with patients. Like they literally have full books of patients.
So the teen centers that are here and in town or in town and in Anderson, those cater pretty much to kids that are already on the straight and narrow and just want to have
because they have to fill activities. Yeah, they have to fill in an application to even go and attend, and you have to have parent permission, and it's not just a walk in. We welcome you. It's not that. It's not that kind of.
It doesn't work like that.
Mm-mm.
And that makes it
It really tough when you don't.
Well, that sets up the Shannon.
Yep.
You know, that's how they wind up on the street. And if the parents are intolerant of that, or it's causing enough problems in the family, which you got to know that this does, they're a little bit hamstrung.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back. Joe over there obsessing on his papers. He's getting ready to rapid fire us with something else. When we come back, be prepared. It's coming.
Petri dish time. Petri dish.
Oh, okay. All right. I knew there was something going on over there. He was too quiet. always worry about the quiet ones.
We're going to talk about the big C.
Oh, the big C.
And it ain't cannabis. And it's not cannabis.
No. It's the bad one. All right. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Oh, much better.
Okay, thanks.
Radio moments. Sorry, Aaron.
I didn't get We Won't Smoke with Willie Anymore because I couldn't get a good cut off of that one.
Okay.
And after this one, I think that's what led me into the spoon playing.
That was an Arlo Guthrie.
I'm loving
original.
This music.
That was Little Feet.
Yeah, that was a redo.
Oh, it was a redo?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I didn't go with the original. I am so sorry.
No.
They had one on there that was Bob Dylan, but I'm sorry. Bob Dylan makes me want to stab a fork in my eye, so we have no Bob. I have 522 songs in here, and none of them involve Bob Dylan, and they never will. And there are no forks in the building, I hope. So
let's just talk.
You already committed the faux pas. You're on second. You're in the batter's cage.
Yeah, we'll get back to him. Because I mentioned before, when we talk about Prop 64, I cannot believe how much you can find on this, and how we were duped into this. I mean, honestly, we were totally duped into this, and it was from people that just wanted to open a pot shop and make money.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing to
the
do
dope
with
store
anything.
The concept is profitable as long as you work with the black market, which we got to go back to.
Yeah, I mean, and we have failed to protect our youth. We have failed to protect our environment. We have failed to protect the citizens of California by unleashing the big boys to move into our state. The cartels, the Mongs, the other crime syndicates who set up vast grows. We are seeing an increase in kidnaps and murders.
Yeah, like 52 up in Siskiyou, I think, to this date.
We have failed our law enforcement.
Yeah, because they're completely overwhelmed.
Yeah, they're overwhelmed. But yet, that was one of the things saying we're going to, that by allowing legal pot shops and cultivators, law enforcement costs will go down.
Yeah, and that's happened nowhere. And besides that, you know, these people aren't growing illegally. I just always go back to this. Like, where in the universe are there cartel crimes that once you legalize whatever it is they're doing, they run out and get business licenses?
Right.
Well, it just doesn't happen.
Well, and here in the city of Reading, my biggest contention with the city of Reading is they thought this was such a cool idea. We're going to bring in all this tax money. And I want to know, what type of law enforcement are they doing? Do they go out regularly to the pot shops? Are they testing the pot for chemicals? Are they even testing for whether they're selling to underage? Are they even finding out where this pot is even going or where it's coming from? You know,
how would you even know that?
Well,
that's always kind of the thing. It's like, how do you even know that?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is, why would you let a business come in if you have no intention of ever doing anything about it?
And you know
monitoring
that,
it, yeah.
Yeah, and you know that the monitoring of it is going to be
do we know how much money has actually come into the county as a result of
not county. Not county.
City.
City.
Nobody seems to track that.
Oh, no, I ask it, but right. All they talk about is how much has come in. But keep in mind,
they don't talk about the cost.
All those dollars go into the general fund.
Right.
So once it goes into the general fund,
it's not matched against the law enforcement costs, society's mm-hmm. costs, nope. the kids that you're talking about
nope.
in school mm-hmm. that have real easy access nope. to all this high-grade stuff.
Nope.
So tell us back about the testing thing in the stores.
Yeah, so let me, I misspoke and I said there were 750 dispensaries in California. That was the number of last year. This year they've got it up to 1,000. So what happened is this company called Anresco Labs, which is probably the premier cannabis testing lab in the Western United States, they decided that they would start checking all the dispensaries. And they went to, in August, they went to HempCon, which is a trade show, and they took samples out of the trade show, and they found, guess what? All the product, 80% of the products came back with tainted with mold, pesticides, and harmful solvents. So let's talk about
the
when
old
we talk about
solvents,
pesticide,
could be toluene.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm. And so the risky products there were cannabis extracts, and the potential health problems came back as reproductive toxicity and cancer. I'm going to let you talk about cancer, Aaron, but I'm going to talk about reproductive toxicity. And this is a short story. Back in 2012, when we were sitting in the city of Reading Council Chambers, and I sat next to a girl with a huge belly, 9 months pregnant, and she got up and spoke about how cannabis use was great for morning sickness and how it helped her all the way through her pregnancy. And she didn't think about the maternal fetal blood brain syndrome going to her baby and all the bad things that was happening to her baby. Now we know, and we're starting to get that information out, but we're going to have to keep pushing it out. 30% of America is going to try recreational marijuana. About 12 to maybe 18% are going to use it on a regular basis. So all of this damage that's occurring in our world, all of this damage in our society is, again, for a very small percentage of society. And of that 12 to 18%, the real legitimate marijuana users are down in single percentage. Single percentage. You can't grow aspirin in your backyard. Do not tell me you can grow marijuana in your backyard as an effective medicine. Can it stone you and take away pain? Yeah. So can a hammer blow to the head. I mean, you know, it's really...
That's a fair point.
Well, I thought you'd like that, right? Yeah. So talk to us about cancer, Aaron, because I know you're pretty good at cancer and Dr. Reese's study.
Well, yeah, I mean, right. Anybody that has maybe just wandered into the radio at this particular point or somebody sending you this show, I never want to assume that everybody's heard everything because, well... That's silly, but
it's not the hearing; it's the listening.
Well, there's that the observing.
Yeah.
But if you were to go to wethepeopleradio.us and you look at the tab labeled pot, it's right next to archives. So when you go to the pot tab, you will find a whole bunch of shows dating back to 2017, and we have medical professionals. So this isn't just like our opinion based on our opinion, and it's I have somebody who always accuses me of it being my, what is it? I have an emotional problem with it or something. It's like anybody who knows me knows I'm not all that emotional to start with.
You mean that pot guy from down south?
Yeah, that one in particular feels the need to get wounded about it about every month, which is just weird. I'm apparently living rent-free in their head.
You are.
Yeah, which is always kind of strange for someone I've never met. But
all the fun we have.
But, oh, the furniture I'll bring in. So I think I'm going to set up a security system, though, in my rental. There's a guy named Dr. Stuart Reese, and he is in our archives multiple times. I think we'll speak with him again soon. And cannabis and childhood cancer, cannabis in all forms, takes a weed whacker to your chromosomes. That is a hot tip. I have never spoken to anyone who said, oh, yeah, I read all about that. I totally know about that. No one knows about that. And it screws up your chromosomes for four generations, not just one. So this decision that, you know, marijuana is wonderful and it's legal and it's in these dope stores and so it's got to be fine. And for that reason, it's got to be fine. And that is what a lot of people use as criteria. Well, they wouldn't be selling it. It wouldn't be legal to sell it if it was,
well,
if it wasn't.
Yeah, and we can really date ourselves in this room But if we remember back in the tobacco days, when the doctors would get up and tell you how wonderful it was to smoke cigarettes.
My doctor smokes unfiltered Camels.
Oh, yeah. And how wonderful this was. And you'd see pictures of them.
Yeah.
And,
well, I was a big fan of Marlboro Man.
Yeah.
He was cool.
He was super cool.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Joe Camel was a cartoon, so yeah. Not
you
as
know,
cool.
You know,
are we not
he lived here in Reading. You knew that, right?
No. You did what?
The Marlboro Man lived here in Reading. I used to work out with him at the old Gold's Gym, and he had stopped smoking at that point in his life. And
he looked like he was 900 years old.
He did. He was an old, grizzled looking guy, and of course, you know, cigarettes took him away.
He's not the guy in the picture who was naked walking down the street holding a dog in front of him that looked like a fox, was he?
I remember
Aaron,
that.
I don't know what website you're looking at, but yeah, I haven't seen that one.
It was an actual picture, and I've got it on my computer.
Okay, coming back to Anresco Labs.
I was thinking of the Marlboro Man. His life just had gone down the drain, and that's how I pictured down the drain.
Well, and what we are not what we're not connecting is that the pot industry is using the playbook exactly from the tobacco industry, like page for page.
Yeah, let's take advantage of the fact that a lot of people don't want to do it. Let's take advantage of the fact that a lot of people won't do their homework. Let's take advantage of the fact that the media will totally bury the science for like
years.
Ever.
Yeah.
And then people won't do research.
And we got to addict the kids because we got to have future clients.
Well, there's that. Mm-hmm.
You mean the pot sign that's on 273 here going out of town on Market Street that talks about a nice, come and have a nice something
sandwich.
At a restaurant, and then you can also consume your edibles. You can have your edibles, and it's on the same sign. We'll talk about that afterwards. I'm not going to badmouth a local business yet. All right, so we're talking about Anresco, and what Anresco found was pesticide levels 1,000 times higher in concentrates than we might normally find in food. So that's going into the body. Now, everybody can recall out there in Radio Land, and when you were back in science class, and you'd get out the Petri dish of you know, sterile media, and you'd make a swab maybe from the inside of your nose, and then you put it there, and you come back the next day, and it would look like, you know, something from the moon. Here you go, Aaron. I'm going to show you.
All the scary, creepy stuff that would grow.
I'll give you a picture, okay? So what came out of that was that we have another potential
problem. It's like a bathroom in a rest stop there.
Yeah.
There you go.
Lung infections and cardiovascular issues. And we know that heavy marijuana use is definitely related to cardiovascular issues. So the UC Davis Medical Center was treating cancer patients and found that a number of them were developing rare lung infections. And one of their patients actually died after smoking or vaporizing medical marijuana, which, of course, is supposed to be tested. So I've actually had people tell me who have emphysema, they go, oh, I smoke or vape marijuana. It makes me feel better. I'm going, yeah, okay. You have diminished lung capacity and you're putting a burnt substance into your lungs. That's filled with chemicals. That's going to
Everybody thinks
okay
it's some organic thing. And by the way, I'm going to pass around the picture that was actually taken right. It's like not far outside our studio, actually. It's on the street right out there. And it was of an actual man.
I remember that.
Do you remember that? See? I told you I wasn't making it up.
Yeah. No.
And the poor RPD officer is wondering, why didn't I bring my gloves today?
He's thinking, we're definitely taking the dog with us. Well, this is a Full Monty situation. Is there a 911 for Full Monty? Do you guys have that? Or radio? Is there a radio code for Full Monty?
Yeah. You just say use BSI, which means body substance isolation. That means you go to the back, you put your gloves on, you put your face mask on, you know, the one they can spit on you. You get out the spit mask. You get out the hobble restraints.
Wow.
There's a lot of touching going on there. I'm thinking I'm going to go with the dog.
There's a lot of PPE goes on there.
All right, sorry.
So guess what's in some of this marijuana, right? So we're making all these products to vape and things like that, and we've got all these residual solvents and chemical accelerants in them. And at high concentrations, there's even a lot of propylene glycol, which that absolutely destroys lung tissues.
Yeah, it's what is propylene? Antifreeze.
Oh, yeah.
It's antifreeze, okay.
Oh,
and then that's used as a...
not good for you, your dog.
Yeah, right. Whoa, let's talk about dogs. Oh, my God. Now you
well,
got
we
me.
Only have like a minute.
Okay, well,
God.
Don't give your dog CBD, please.
Yeah.
That you're giving them the same chemicals
that are going
in your body.
And they actually just sent out a thing that said, don't give your dog... CBD.
States are starting to outlaw it, and the pot people are going like, but my dog needs it. My dog needs it. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, we're okay. We still have like Well, I got 20 seconds.
I gotta say this one line.
All right.
If you are not part of the solution, then you are the problem.
Personal responsibility? Oh, say it's not.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Come on.
We're going to come back with more of it and stick with us. So, September 25th, 2022, you're listening to We the People, and you can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
One joke over the line. Sitting downtown in a railway station. One joke over the line. I'm waiting for the train that goes home, sweet Mary. Hoping that the train is on time. Sitting downtown in a railway station. One joke over the line.
Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm still Bill Cundiff. and our sponsor this hour...
I don't know. What did the fox say?
Yes,
I couldn't resist.
For all those of you who don't know what that means, you need to go to YouTube and look up What Does the Fox Say? And it's a weird little video, and if you've never seen it...
Don't. It will haunt you for the rest of your lives.
You'll never forget it.
I first heard that song in fourth grade, and it's
wow.
It's still bouncing around in there.
I know, it's bad.
It's evil.
Bad. Made Bill think of it.
Yeah, it's funny.
Bill,
funny stuff.
Bill, we need to talk about people that actually work for a living, so tell me about our sponsor.
Well, regardless
of Officer Drill.
Of popular opinion, Pape Machinery is the local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer.
Yay!
And they're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And they can get you pretty much anything you need or want in the way of John Deere equipment. They also work on other brands of equipment. Give them a call, 226-9226, and get your tractor in there. Get it freshened up for the fall season. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And you know what? Nothing runs like a deer, and our marijuana eradication skid steer is up there getting serviced right now, and it does a great job in the grows and does the job that 20 deputies would have to do. And it is a thing of beauty watching the opera of the skid steer going through an illegal grow and taking
and
out the water source.
Yep, and just bashing down everything.
Well,
yeah.
we now have destruction orders, which is different than other counties. Our county now is issuing destruction orders. So when we
and is this in Shasta and Siskiyou, or
this is in Shasta. Siskiyou, unfortunately, there since they've been sued,
they got the lawsuit
going on, they're not doing destruction orders. And we're going after the water and the environmental crimes because that's where the money is. And these are the people, for example, up in Mill Creek subdivision that are using the water out of Cow Creek and then putting out whoa.
Yeah. Wasn't me.
And then putting...
He's destruction in the water. That's perfect.
And yeah, that was...
A little free sound effect.
That was the last drop, okay? So they're throwing all the chemicals in the water up there, and all that water is coming down Cow Creek, and it doesn't even make it down to the ACID because of all the drought. But still, the people in Round Mountain and Bella Vista and all these communities, that water's coming down and going into their aquifer that they're drinking.
There you go.
And we have the microplastics. That's a big thing, especially up in Siskiyou. Every time they cut the plastic off the hoop houses, they just leave it in the environment. And that'll take, 100 years?
Well, and the wind is so strong up there, so it just blows all over the place.
So when you talk about destruction orders, what's that entail? I mean, I know you take out the plants.
Don't you know what a destruction order sounds like? It's you will destroy.
Yes, you will. Okay.
We used to not be able to take out the actual infrastructure, the hoop house. So the deputies would cut the plastic off. You have to cut the plastic off first.
Even go in, because otherwise you just get gassed out.
You get gassed out. You can't stand it, right? So you cut the plastic, you let it air, and then you go through the front door with a skid steer, and you go up and down the rows, and you take out the marijuana, and you leave it, and you dig a hole, and you bury it. We're not supposed to transport it anymore because of AQMD regulations.
What does that mean?
So if we get thousands of pounds of marijuana,
sure,
we don't take it somewhere anymore. You can't, because it's releasing the terpenes or the aromatics that's in the marijuana.
Ew.
You can't put that. Those are oils. That's going into it's going into the air. You don't want to travel over and down the road with that stuff.
Just spreading it all over everybody.
Right, so
besides that, where are you going to find a place that's big enough and it takes a ton of time and
to bury it?
Yeah, and it's just yeah.
Now this is the 100-pound gorilla in the room, is that all this stuff is toxic, and we're not able to really deal with it in the manner that it needs to be dealt with.
But we're going to sell it to the public.
Oh, by the way, you'll like this one, Aaron. You know all the big fires that we just had up in Siskiyou and down here in Shasta County?
Yes.
Okay, so all of that marijuana up there had all that smoke come down on top of it, all the smoke particles, and all that marijuana just got harvested, and we're already getting reports of people smoking that marijuana that's been had the smoke particles dumped on it. They didn't say, like, ooh, this marijuana is contaminated. They just harvested it faster and got it out into the stream. So all that stuff has already gone down, and we already know that smoke particles themselves are carcinogenic, right? That's why our firefighters get cancer later in their life. So all that marijuana, the thousands of pounds that's been harvested.
See, I wonder if any of that had poison oak smoke on it, because there's hardly any of that around.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if
yeah.
you can get past the spray adhesive that they put on it to attract more pollen and you know, make them grow bigger.
Now, here's where my marijuana...
so many things not to like.
My marijuana friends could help us out, because the legal market... The legal market, just so you know, is objecting just as strenuously, well, many people are, to the illegal market, because a permit today for just a small marijuana operation is almost $100,000.
And that's to grow commercially?
That's to actually...
Or have a dope store.
Yeah, have a dope store. We don't call it that anymore. It's a...
It's a pot shop.
It'll always be a dope store for me.
Cannabis couture.
If you hear I called it a pot shop, it's a lie.
We call it, you know, cannabis couture or whatever the fancy French name you want to give to it.
All righty there.
Right?
Okay, Joe.
We can go down.
We're going to call him Captain Grey Poupon.
No, we can have our little storefront in Shasta Lake, and then we can have our 100,000-square-foot facility down in San Diego with the green glass, the polished floors, and the Corinthian leather furniture.
Oh. Fine Corinthian leather or just regular Corinthian leather?
You know, if you went into a pot shop today, you would think that, and they're very well run. Right, the pot shops are very well run. I mean, they're good business models as far as what's out in front, but the people are not trained. You know, they're telling you, go in there and you say, I can't sleep well. Oh, I'm going to give you, you know, sour diesel or whatever. It's going to help you sleep. They're not allowed to do that, but a lot of that's going on.
That's a catchy title.
That's a real one, by the way.
That's a real name.
Yeah, it's a real name.
People put that in their mouth.
Yes.
I'd like some sour diesel, please.
Well, what's the difference?
Put it in my mouth.
If you're smoking something, you're basically putting your mouth on a tailpipe anyway, right?
Well, that's true.
You know?
Got a point.
But most people don't smoke anymore. Most people,
it's all the edibles.
It's edibles and concentrates.
Yeah, right. And all these, you think about all these edibles and concentrates and all of this.
Where you know even less about where it came from.
Our kids are getting a hold of this.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Hello, cannabis industry. I'm out there. You can find me. You can call me anytime if you want to work with me and start turning in the illegal grows. Oops, I forgot. That's where you're getting a lot of your marijuana.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Darn it. Well, because, I mean, how would you even know that they didn't? I mean, it's not profitable to run one of these everything that I've
heard
and read.
But the state is telling us that they're barcoding all the plants and it's seed to sale. We know everything.
Okay, that makes no sense.
Because who's enforcing it? Who's checking?
Did you know there's only 8 enforcement officers, actual enforcement officers? They have what's called, in the Department of Cannabis Control, there's compliance officers and enforcement officers. And the enforcement officers are they're gun toters. They're the ones that will go out and actually destroy a marijuana grow. They haven't done one operation, not one. They're very frustrated. They're kept in the dark.
This is state
Department
guys.
Of Cannabis Control law enforcement. Now there's the compliance officers and Nicole Elliott, who's the head of the Department of Cannabis Control. She's she doesn't know anything about cannabis. She doesn't know anything. She's a political appointee from Mr. Newsom. Okay, just like the attorney that made Prop 64. Where did Newsom end up putting him? He made him the head of the Fair Political
Practices Commission? FPPC?
Yes, he did.
Who regulates all of the political donations to candidates. Well, gosh, that's handy.
Are we talking about Mr. Cry and Ms. Resner?
We're just talking about anybody.
Anybody.
And the dope guys are really good at having the LLC of the LLC of somebody else's grandma's LLC.
Right.
When Mr. Cry told me that he took marijuana money and I looked at the company that gave it to him, it sounds like that company is a beekeeping operation. Has nothing to do. There's nothing to do in the name with cannabis at all. And I had to go look in the Bureau of the Department of Cannabis Control to see, this is marijuana. This isn't a beekeeping business. This is marijuana. And also, when you look and you're an informed voter, and everybody should be an informed voter, and you want to know, go and look where these people are getting their money.
Flat out ask them.
Ask them.
And they do have to file where they get their donations.
Right.
Yeah, but if it's coming from a person, Aaron, and you don't know that person is...
Right. Easy to hide.
Right.
Like, for example, in Ms. Resner's campaign, there's a person there who's been fined, apparently, for cannabis operations doing illegal grading, and now he's donating to her campaign heavily. And then there's another person who apparently is a large marijuana producer in this town.
Illegal.
Legal and illegal.
Both.
Yeah. He's donating heavily. And they play the games with the $4,900 donation. So you'll see all of a sudden it'll be that person and it'll be a friend of that person and a friend of that person and they'll all be the $4,900 donations. So for Aaron and I have had a chat, and she claims that she's going to come to Shasta County and that she's going to support law enforcement and not promote cannabis. I don't believe it for one second based upon the past record of what we've seen in the city. Also, during the last Board of Supervisor meetings a couple of weeks ago, our agricultural commissioner came in and, without being asked for by the county, provided a document saying this is what cannabis could bring to the county.
Because this is what the city got. Yeah.
Why did they do that?
Why is that in his job description?
You know what, Aaron? This is the heartache I have with all this. Back in 2012, when Kathy and I and everybody was fighting this way back with, was it Measure A? Fighting Measure A.
Yeah. 2014.
We asked for input into the laws in Shasta County. Completely shut out. Anybody in prevention, anybody in anti-drug, the county staff did not want to talk to us at all. They only wanted to talk to the pro-cannabis folks.
They rolled out the ordinance to allow the stores in.
That's right.
Right.
Would be something for people who live. Obviously, we're discussing one place because that's where we have, facts. But in your town, it's not going to be that hard to drill down and figure it out.
Yeah, but... Let's look at the new downtown area. That's under a business district. So they have their own set of rules because they want to make it the next Bend of California is really what they're looking to do. But
it's too
guess
hot
what?
To defend.
Well, I know. But guess what? One of the things is they don't allow pot shops.
Now, why is that?
Why is that?
Whoa, it's a legal business.
Yeah, but in their business district bylaws or whatever you have, they don't allow it. Well, so how is it? Is it because maybe you don't want that type of business in your?
And as we told your audience last time, the cannabis business itself generally is pretty safe. Although they're starting to get the robberies from the deliveries. So if you're delivering cannabis, that's basically you're an armed guard because you're going to get robbed doing that. But beyond the confines of the cannabis store, and you go out into the community a couple of square miles, then the crime is generally higher. The drunk driving, and these are statistics that are provable, the drunk driving is higher, and the youth use is higher because of the reduction of the ability to see harms.
Right.
When society normalizes a behavior, and I don't care what it is, when they normalize that behavior, our kids are going to buy in. Right. And we talk about prevention. Now, prevention is the perfect model. Right. If we had perfect prevention, we wouldn't have any drug use because everybody would go, we're not going to use it because we understand it's dangerous for us.
Right.
But we're not getting the funding that we need. The city, which is supposed to put money into prevention, we don't see anything. Do we see any money from
that?
No, no money from that. The state, which is also supposed to put a lot of money in prevention, do we see the money we're supposed to get? Or for state law enforcement, wasn't it supposed to be 6% of all the cannabis funds?
No, it's like 6% of whatever's left over after they've allocated.
What's left over?
See, that's a part of the law that nobody paid attention to. Was like, oh, we're going to give $5 million to some college. We're going to give $5 million to CHP. We're going to give millions to research and all this other stuff. And with whatever was left over, then 10% of whatever's left over would go out to the counties.
And I don't think people realize how big a role they play in this. And a lot of them just feel powerless. You know, well, they're going to do it anyway. I guess I might as well vote for it.
You're not powerless. Let me tell you what you can do. You can go in front of your board of supervisors and you can say something like this. We understand the state's going to want to put a marijuana dispensary on every corner in the county. How about we establish a new county ordinance that says the following. This county will allow marijuana within its confines in any incorporated city that has already enabled cannabis in its city. And people that need or want cannabis are already served by the delivery services that are in place. But cannabis dispensaries shall remain illegal in the county area. Do you think either of you could work with that? Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're not going to want to, but it'd be good to get them on the record to oppose it. And then the people who oppose it, especially the people who lean on it's a legal business, those are the folks I would look at first because – anyone who's not willing to discuss the ancillary problems of this
drug whole thing, right?
You know, the whole industry, the drug itself,
or admit that there's a problem here,
right? The folks that just lean on, well, it's a legal business, and I'm just trying to support my family. Okay, what else is going on there? All right, got to take a really quick break. We're going to go listen to the Wildwood Flower. You probably haven't heard about that in a while. We're going to go there for a little bit with our friend Jim Stafford. So our
that's right there in Trinity County.
Yeah. So you're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
The name of this song is The Wildwood Flower. Now, The Wildwood Flower is an old country classic. It's gained a whole new popularity. The song isn't any more popular, but the flower's doing real good. Wildwood flower grew wild on the farm, and we never know what it was called. Some said it's a flower, and some said it's a weed. I didn't give it much thought. One day I was out there talking to my brother, and I reached down for a weed to chew on. Things got fuzzy and things got blurry, and then everything was gone. Didn't know what happened, but I knew it beat the hell out of Smith and Burley. I come to smoking them wildwood flowers got to be a habit. We never seen no harm. Oh, we thought it was kind of handy. Take a trip and never leave the farm. They go puff that wildwood weed. Next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind the little animals. All good things got to come to an end. It's the same with the wildwood weeds. One day, this fella from Washington come by and spied it and turned white as a sheet. And he dug and he burned and he burned and he dug and he killed all our cute little weeds. And then he drove away. We just smiled and waved. Sitting there on that sack of seeds.
So, Liam, did you know that one?
I didn't.
That's my goal. Got to play at least a few every week.
Educating me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was the back in the days of the hippie weed where it was like 5% THC.
Oh, I think it was 3 or 4, yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff was 4%. Really? Yeah. How do you know that, Kathy?
You know, I lived back in that day.
Yeah.
Didn't we all? But who cared, right? No. That's the, I guess, no. I've never really thought about that. But back, in high school, nobody was measuring THC content.
No.
We didn't even know it had THC in it.
Nope.
Did you know it had THC in it?
I plead the fifth.
Well, and they did talk about the pot brownies. Those were very popular back in the day. yeah. even back then. But it was more about Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill. What can I say?
Yeah, I didn't smoke. I was an athlete. I thought
it was the walnuts and the brownies that got you high.
It was the bad walnuts.
Yeah,
dirty walnuts.
Dirty walnuts.
Yeah, but it's interesting to think about that though, because high school and whatever age, they're not looking at the ingredient list
and
trying to decide is this
good for you or not.
How much THC is in this?
If it passes the smell test, it's good to go.
The sniff test.
And what's so scary is even our local administrators and stuff, they don't even know what to do. I mean, because vaping is such a huge, huge problem on campuses. But they know it's not just the nicotine they're vaping. Like, they know it's THC.
But it doesn't smell like everybody's smoking pot in the bathroom.
With the edibles now, I mean, there's no smoke, there's no smell, there's...
I remember when I learned about vodka-soaked gummy bears. I was like, what?
Vodka soaked gummy bears?
Yeah. They show the kids. You soak them in vodka, and then you can just take them to school and just pop a vodka gummy bear. Hmm. I'm like, oh my God, kids!
I wish I'd have known about that, because that watermelon rum was really messy to eat.
Okay, in high school back east, we had a lot. It was a big school, and they had a lot of fields. You know, we had like multiple. We played field hockey, and soccer wasn't a thing, but we had. Big field, so it was quite a distance until there was a berm of woods around the edge of the school. So in finals week, we always had somebody who was on keg duty. So they had a keg on a stand out there in the woods, right? So you'd go out there between your finals, and we were all obviously kind of smart because we got good grades, but somehow we were drinking during our finals. And so the vice principal, he thought he was super cool. He'd take his golf club out there, and he'd, like, golf his way over to the woods to try to catch us. So he was at the far end, and, like, meanwhile, there's some kid hoofing the keg down to the other end of the woods, and then he'd golf down to that end, and it would go back, and it was kind of like the cartoon with the sheepdog and the wolf. Yeah.
Are we telling our 15-year-old alcohol-related stories?
Yeah, I had a lot of those.
If we are, I'll tell my one and only.
Oh, please.
Oh, you're going to like it. Well,
the
men will like it. The girls don't. Okay, so when I was 15, in the summers, we'd go over to our farm in the Catskill Mountains, and we'd have to work all summer really hard. So I took two of my friends over. And one weekend, my parents' friends came up to visit them. And this is a huge place with multiple houses. So we weren't living with our parents. We were living way up the road somewhere. And so my parents' friends came up for a large dinner party, a number of different parents, and they brought their daughters with them. So think about having 15-year-old boys who haven't seen a girl in 3 months. Living in the middle of nowhere. So, of course, we plied them with the alcohol. And back then, the beer cans were really made out of steel. Remember that? Like Pabst Blue Ribbon and those kind of brands. So by the end of the summer, we had lined up a triangle of beer cans inside this schoolhouse where we were sleeping from one side to the other. And so these girls made the mistake of actually coming to our little cabin that weekend, and they, of course, were plied with alcohol. And the end of the night occurred, and I had to walk this girl back down the road to the main house, this big main house where my parents were having a huge dinner party. There was like 20 people there, and the girl walked in front of me, and I walked in behind her, and the conversation immediately stopped, and they all turned and looked at me. And this poor girl, she was in her 501s, but they were inside out with the pockets on the outside.
Oh, jeez.
And there was all kinds of pine needles and stuff in her hair, and her parents were giving me the eyeball like you wouldn't believe, and I, like, snuck out the back, and that was the last. And that was the last time I actually tried alcohol in my life, when I my age of 15 years old, the inside out with the 501s.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty good. Actually, one and done, huh?
All right, so let's get back.
And then you had to become a policeman because otherwise your parents were going to send you.
Actually, my foray into becoming a policeman was I was searching for meaning in life, and I started to take martial arts, and my martial arts instructor basically smacked me around enough that I said, I need to straighten out. And there were some policemen in the class, and I just really liked them. They're just their camaraderie. And I said, you know, I think I'd like to become a policeman. And so I grew up in Connecticut. I moved from there to Maryland, and I started going to the University of Maryland. And I had a hard time paying for my education, and the state was offering free education if you decided you want to become a state police officer. And so I said, yeah, that sounds good. So I sat in a lottery of like 5,000 people. And as I'm white.
Oh, they wish there was a day like that.
Right. So I was a white male, and I was in this lottery, and they were pushing. It was minority hiring at the time, and I didn't think I had a chance. And really, I shouldn't, because there was people that were a lot more that had experience. I was just a college kid, and I got hired, and I spent my first couple of years working nights in a radio car on the 95 freeway, and then going to school all day. And I had no life. And then one year it was snowing 6 feet, and I just said, "I'm done with the snow." And I came out and visited my brother in Beverly Hills, and looked at girls in bikinis on the beach, on Venice Beach, at 23 years old.
Who needs Inside Out Levi's when you have bikinis? So yeah. Much better.
What a segue. And the rest is history.
Yeah, and if Eddie Murphy can be a Beverly Hills cop,
that's
so
right.
could he.
So could he. Right.
And then on a downer note, your partner of a long time killed himself because he went down the marijuana rabbit hole.
He did. So he was an outstanding deputy, spent 30 years as a deputy. And when he retired, most deputies with that many years on, you'll have a lot of injuries. And he did have a lot of injuries. And he tried traditional pharma for the first year, and he didn't like it. So his second year into retirement, and he didn't tell me this, he started to he went to a dispensary. They recommended that he try honey oil.
And how long ago is this?
This is now. He's been dead 5 years.
Oh, so it's not that long ago.
No. Yeah, it's pretty recent. And so about 3 months in, and he and I would talk every week. And about 3 months in, I noticed that there was a change in his personality. And I just thought, you know, we're all getting older. And then he began to have a fascination with death. And he liked to make, like, skull jewelry. And he started to look like, I mean, he looked like a scrote dirtbag biker. He really did. His appearance changed. And then he called me one day, and he said, look, the neighbors are shining lights in my window. I've had to cut down all my trees between me and my neighbor. And I said, look, I think are you having a break from reality? No, this is really happening. And he would send me pictures of trees and things like that. And at one point, a friend of his called me and said, he's totally whacked out. And he was. So I called my station down there, and I said, this deputy is needs to be hospitalized. And so I wrote a 5150 report on him, and that's a person who's a danger to self or others or gravely disabled. And he was at that point. He was definitely gravely disabled. They came out and they checked him, and he played the game because he knew how to play the game, and they let him go. And so his addiction got worse after that. And eventually, I kept calling saying, hey, you guys not only need to come take him to the hospital, you need to take his badge and gun away because he's now a danger to others, right? And eventually they did. So he had to surrender all his weapons. He was a veteran, so he went to the VA hospital. They kept him for about 3 weeks, got him kind of sober. He came out, and then about 3 months later, he relapsed. And then at the end of that year, he, in great desperation and intoxicated with his body tissues were full of THC. He lay down on his bed, and he took a tactical knife, and starting at his left ear, he cut himself from across his throat all the way to his right ear. So he committed suicide that way, and he bled out on his bed that day. And his brother called for deputies the next day to go find him, and the deputies came and found him, and he had committed suicide. He was dead. And I know that even today, those deputies have a hard time with it. I have a hard time with it. I feel like maybe I should have done more, that I could have abandoned him. His brother said I was the only deputy that ever cared enough about him to call and do something with the department. But it was too late at that point. And that is not an unusual story.
And that's a guy who, he wasn't 15 years old who just tried it at a party.
No, he was 60.
This was a grown man who had dealt with drugs and the effects of his entire life and wasn't able to pull himself out.
And had been drug tested his entire life. So we got drug tested. You get tested every year for drugs. And sometimes, because it was random drug testing, heck, I got tested once a month for several months at a time. You know, I kept saying, hey, you suspect me of something because I'm kind of crazy or what? No.
But isn't that one of the new laws that Newsom put in, that we can no longer test our employees?
That's right.
Yeah, what could go wrong with that?
Oh, my God. I mean, workman's comp is just going, yay.
Hey,
yeah, true.
And it's going to go into your public safety positions. Don't think it's not. Don't think that you're firemen. You know.
Well, there's a. Yeah. I mean, that's already a really big deal,
right?
For law enforcement and people in those kinds of professions where you need people to not be using drugs,
yeah,
to find people that aren't using drugs.
Well, and I mean, do you really want a doctor to come in and perform surgery on you? Then
maybe. Well, Bill can show you a scar. He had one that was drunk who sewed him up.
I mean, come on.
It's not just those positions. I mean,
oh, yeah,
all your positions, your construction workers, your highway workers. I mean, do you want them to not pass a drug test?
Right.
Your truck drivers.
You mean your Dodge, the guys that are building Dodge cars back there in Detroit? That was a big problem from them. Their people were going off at lunch and smoking marijuana and then come back and building cars and not putting all those brake parts in like they should.
Yeah, the mirrors are on upside down. The windows roll up when you want to roll them down. Yeah. Liam has a question.
There was the weed law thing about, like, I think it's like you can't fire. I don't know.
That's right.
Right.
So are police stations federal or are they local? Or because I know that weed's still illegal at the federal level. So would that not apply to government positions?
If you're law enforcement with a federal agency, like Forest Service, FBI,
park rangers,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have state. Would be Highway Patrol.
Right.
Because they work under the governor. You got Cal Fire.
Local control, obviously.
I see.
And you have private industry.
Could you, as a
drug law,
as a county, pass like an ordinance or a...
So a police department could say that as a part of your prerequisites, I think, but see, it's going to get challenged. That's the problem.
Yeah.
The unions are going to challenge it because anytime there's a regulation, they're going to challenge that regulation. So I don't know how. Nobody knows how this is going to turn out, but it's not going to turn out good.
No.
And that's a good point that you bring up with it being federally illegal, because honestly, this is a Schedule I drug that still is federally illegal. And even though they keep talking about it, and hopefully they never get it through. But
truck drivers have to pass a DOT test, and anytime there's an accident, they have pot in their system, they don't work.
But anymore. The other thing is
airplane pilots.
Yeah.
Holy hell!
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
we see that new cars in the future are going to test you for substances before you get in and you're able to drive. Just like we have an intoxilizer in a vehicle now, I've been reading that the manufacturers are going to build that in. Well, is it going to just be alcohol? Are they going to do cannabis or drugs? How are they going to determine that?
Isn't weed different? Because you can only really get an accurate screening through like a urine or a spit or a blood test. You can't do like a breathalyzer.
You can't do it through a blood test because it's a fat-soluble molecule.
Yeah.
That's why it has such harsh consequences for the brain. Alcohol is water-soluble.
Right.
So that's why it processes through the system. But anything with cannabis is a fat-soluble molecule, and the largest concentration of fat in your body, provided
your
you don't have a rear end the size of a school bus, is in your brain.
Yeah.
And so it stays in there for a long time.
We were working on a breath test, and prior to COVID, there was a company that was getting pretty close.
Okay.
But in COVID, they had to go off and just do COVID testing. But,
right.
The first successful company that comes out with a breath test that actually makes it through the court challenge process, goes in front of the Ninth, and then goes in front of the Supremes.
But then you're going to have to come up with a level that, just like alcohol.
Right. Well, and I've read articles that... like concentrations of like weed, it doesn't affect everyone the same way. Like one person could have like a really high THC level and be completely normal, and someone could have like barely any and just be stoned out of their mind.
But it's like alcohol.
And that's like alcohol.
Just like alcohol.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. Like any other drug.
Like any other drug.
But the storage of it in your system is the trick, and that's where all this chromosomal damage and all that stuff, when you look at all that, who even knows how long all of this is lurking?
Yeah.
The California District Attorneys Association fought for a limit, a per se limit. So if you had this in your body, you were determined to be under the influence of 2 nanograms. The marijuana industry said, nope, 5. And it went to an impasse. It's never been, nothing's ever done with it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And it should. I'm sorry. If we're going to keep calling this a legal drug or let's a legal business, like then let's start treating it.
Aaron, sit outside any one of these dispensaries for an hour and watch people drive in and watch people drive away. And you tell me, even as an uneducated citizen, and I don't think citizens are uneducated, but even as a citizen who's untrained.
Who's not a drug-sniffing dog, I mean.
Right. But you can watch these people drive out and you go like, that's not normal driving.
Well, okay, I'll give you an example. We were sitting at a Mexican restaurant, and the window faced it's like a smoke shop. It wasn't even a dope store,
A vape store.
But they had the thing that was pissing me off was out of the corner of my eye, there was a running, what do you call it?
Marquee.
Like a reader board. Yeah, like a marquee. It was like, get CBD for your dog here. And it's like, I'm going over there. You know, it just kept scrolling. Well, here came all of these. It was like car after car. And every car that came in the parking lot, they could have gone to a couple of restaurants or they could have gone to that. And you could tell just by looking at the vehicles who was going to the smoke shop. And they came out and I thought, you know, you have to be pretty desperate for a job to work in there because this looks like a really derelict clientele, like a spooky clientele.
I know.
And shady.
Right. Hold it.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Cannabis and violence. You mean there's actually a correlation?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And all
we
the school shootings and
that.
All that. No, we haven't. So let's take a quick break. I can fulfill your wish for weed with Willie and John Prine. I can make those both happen for you fellers. And we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Play that funky tune.
I have the key to escape reality, and you may see me tonight with an illegal smile. It don't cost very much, but it lasts a long while. Won't you please tell the man I didn't kill anyone? No, I'm just trying to have me some fun.
I always heard that his herb was top shelf. Lord, I just could not wait to find out for myself.
Well, don't knock it till you tried it, and I've tried it, my friend. I'll never smoke weed with Willie again.
Apparently there was an incident in Texas, and the story goes on.
Yeah.
Of course, that's why I was up till 3:30 in the morning, because I had to listen to all the songs all the way through. Oh, my God. All right, so we're in the final throws. What have we missed?
Well, I think we really need to get people to read that L.A. Times series that Paige St. John is doing. She is doing awesome, awesome job. Awesome.
Yeah, because honestly, if you don't have, we're going to hit the road beginning of October. The three of us are going to run over to another county and help them out because they feel like they're at a disadvantage. They've got a lot of people in their county government that are in favor of legalizing. They've got a measure on their ballot. And the people who've been fighting this for a long time that just keep getting kicked to the curb and dismissed are like, please, we need someone to come over and help us. So
and we are the perfect group.
Exactly. So no matter where you live, find people that are fighting this and join forces, because this isn't a battle that's won with one very smart person who comes rolling into the room with all the answers. It just doesn't work like that.
It doesn't work that way.
And we'll provide signs. We have pre-made signs that if people are interested, they want to come to a Board of Supervisors meeting or a City Council meeting, or in the case of Susanville, we're going to take our sign contingent over there. You know, it's our city, our county, our water, no illegal marijuana. And that's what we think. You're not hearing us talk about legal marijuana. We're talking about illegal marijuana.
And the thing is, the legal marijuana does not get rid of the illegal. So legalizing it does not solve the problem.
That's right.
And that is...
Well, that's our big talking point, though.
Right. Is the talking point.
Yeah. Well, and all we have to do is say,
has that worked?
Yeah, where has that worked? Because in the state of California, Prop 64 did not do anything for us. Nothing.
No.
I've never had a call from a legal marijuana establishment saying, hey, we heard you guys are in prevention. We'd like to donate some money to you to make sure that our kids stay off drugs. Not once. Twitter, nothing.
Oh, but we wouldn't take the money anyways.
That's true. And it's important for your audience to know that we're completely self-funded. We take no money from anyone else. SCAM, which is Shasta and Siskiyou County Citizens Against Marijuana, and LENS, which is the Law Enforcement News Service, we are completely privately funded. We don't take money from anyone. We put our money where our mouth is. We do this all on our own.
Yeah, you can't sit back any longer and ignore these issues. They are next
door.
Well,
one of the arguments I heard was, and I think it was Lassen County, it was brought up that, it didn't stop the illegal grows in Siskiyou County, but they waited too long. You know, if we can get this passed for the legal grows and stay on top of it, then that'll never happen in our county.
But they already got the illegal grows.
Exactly. They're not recognizing that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. No. Yeah. It's already happening.
When I speak to other states and I go and talk to their cannabis boards, they all, every one of them, think the same thing. We are going to be able to control it, and not one of them can. You look at what's happened to Oklahoma. Oklahoma's got the Asians are all over Oklahoma now, flooding that place with marijuana. I've been talking to West Virginia, and West Virginia thinks, you know, and they had their state police, the head of their state police commissioner came on and spoke to me, and he said, well, we don't have a problem. And I said, oh, au contraire, you'll have a problem. You're just not going to catch it. It's going to be there, and all of a sudden it will be a problem, and you won't see it coming.
It's kind of like, it's kind of like ants, you know. How many of us are like, well, if I asked you right now, you know, do you have a pest problem at your house? You'd be like, no, I don't have a pest problem. Put down one piece of dog food on your kitchen floor and just wait. And here come the ants. And that's exactly how this works. And once it starts,
you can't stop it.
Turning it back is like ants. And they just keep coming.
Yeah, there's too much money involved. And it affects every business. It's going to get into your city and county governments.
Well, it affects
and the money
you.
Just... It just intoxicates people.
It does. And your legal businesses, the bad part is it lures in a lot of your legal businesses.
It does.
Your well drillers, your water delivery people.
Your hardware stores.
Your
lumberyards.
City of Reading, brand new landscape store specializing in stuff to the pot industry. It's not where you want to go and buy your stuff for your roses.
No. No.
And what's so sad is I remember when Newsom was promoting Prop 64, and he says, you know, we've looked at the state of Washington. We've looked at the state of Colorado. We're going to do it better. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah, we've learned from their mistakes.
Yeah, we've learned from their mistakes.
It doesn't matter. Once the money starts flowing, people turn a blind eye.
Yep.
They take the cash, and it's so much of it is cash.
Oh yeah. It's all cash.
Every business, you know, somebody walks in and flashes a big wad of money. Hey, I need this or I need that. How much is it going to cost? I remember when I was selling equipment over on the coast, I walked into a material supply company, and I just walked in the front door and walked up to the counter, and behind the counter there was a lady with a wad of cash in her hands. I swear it was 6 inches thick, and she was counting it. And I didn't ask any questions until I got outside and asked one of the employees. I go, wow, what's the deal with cash? Oh, that's one of the local growers comes in and prepays for all his soil, all his amendments, all that. They just come in with cash. Well, what business is going to walk away from that?
Right.
And so they look forward to it every year. Hey, season's coming. We're going to get a big influx of cash. And so they don't
and then
voice
when you're,
up.
They well,
don't say
and they, yeah, and they don't see anything wrong. And when you're out there talking about this being a bad thing for the community, you get a lot of pushback from people that you wouldn't think would push back, because they're looking at, well, you know, they've taken away the logging, the mining. I mean, Siskiyou County is perfect.
Right.
No logging, no mining. They've impoverished large swaths of the county, and yet their Tractor Supply store in a town with 7,500 people was the highest grossing store in the nation.
And one farmer selling $13 million of water per year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was one out of three.
Well, how about your car dealerships?
I mean, that all goes back to the community. Yeah, and you get these small communities like Lassen and some of their whatever businesses are up there, that's what they look at. They're like, oh, man, we'll have new customers. We'll have this.
Yep.
But
once that starts, if you don't like it, it's not a decision that you get to reverse easily.
No, if at all.
No. Our sheriff, God bless him, Mike Johnson, is doing a good job. You don't hear about him going after cannabis, but he is. But what can a sheriff do? You know, in a county with 7,000 illegal grows, if he does 100 a year, and they're spectacular what he's doing, spectacular grows he's taken out, and he's doing a good job. But that's 100 out of 7,000. And I'm including all the mom-and-pop small backyard grows of 90 plants. 90 plants are 100,000, making $100,000 a year. Who wants to work here? You go out to the eastern part of the county, out into the, Bend area out there. There's a lot of growers out there that are also on social welfare. That's another thing I find is that these people are double dipping and using their social welfare.
Sure.
And just going out there.
Because they're not claiming any income.
They're not claiming any income. So that's going on.
Well, another thing, I mean, imagine if we had a federal administration that wanted to start cracking down on this, these pot shops would be out of business overnight. A lot of businesses that are taking all this cash in are going to have to really watch the way they do business because it is illegal to take money from drug sales.
Right.
And if you're found to be trading with these companies that are
dealing with an illegal drug,
you're on the hook too.
Right.
So I don't know. It's an evil web.
Yeah, and once you get in, you don't get out. You know, it isn't an easy thing to walk away from. And in a lot of cases, I'm sorry, but it's a drug cartel.
Oh,
You don't just get a little involved with a drug cartel.
Right.
That doesn't actually, that's not a thing.
No, you don't get to get out.
In our last couple of minutes, I did want to do a promotion of our upcoming documentary. It's going to be the Pot Dogs from...
Oh, yeah. Talk to us about Doris, the dogs up there.
Yep.
Sorry.
From Misery to Hope. It's a documentary we're working on right now. We've already been interviewing one of the main people is a gal named Georgine Murphy. She runs a rescue up there called That Place Called Home. And it is majority of the pot dogs that are taken in. And now what happens up there is the growers come in from Wisconsin or from Minnesota, and they'll come in for the season. And then when it's cold, they leave and they go back to their hometowns wherever they were from. And they bring in the dogs. All these dogs are bred. They're all tied up. And when I say tied up, folks, they're tied up with wire, barbed wire around their necks. They will wire a sacrificial dog onto a post in front of their grow, and that attracts the other growers' dogs because these growers aren't all friendly with each other. They war with each other all the time. It's all about money.
Oh, sure.
So the other growers' dogs are then attracted to this dog who they end up, killing and eating, and then the original grower comes out with his rifle and he shoots all these dogs, and he does that so that he can pilfer, and there won't be any protection dogs at the grow that he's against or wants to rip off. So at the end of the season, these dogs, Georgine Murphy, will actually go up into the pot grows. The grow itself is abandoned. The dogs will be wired with a chain or wired with this barbed wire in the grow, and she'll release them, and she'll bring them in with the most horrific injuries, folks, the most disgusting injuries. I have video of the dogs whose stomachs have been eviscerated with barbed wire, whose testicles have been cut off. And Georgine takes all these animals and she fixes them. She pays for them. This woman lives like a total pauper, folks, and we're going to do everything we can to help her. We're going to start a fund for her. We're going to try to raise $30,000 for her to pay off. She bought a building, which is the original church in Doris, and then it was the original school in Doris, and she bought it, and it's in horrible disrepair, but she paid to put up good fencing around the location and put some kennels in, and she spends her entire Social Security check taking care of these dogs. They live in her house with her. She has somewhere between 25 and 50 dogs at a time, and you'd think, well, where is the county? This is a poor county. They don't have animal control. Animal control is 60 miles away in another location.
Yeah.
So they default to her, and sometimes she'll find these dogs running on the freeway. They'll get killed on Highway 97. She has to go scrape them up. Sometimes she'll get a call from the ranchers because these dogs and packs are attacking their cattle, and sometimes the ranchers just shoot them, and other times they'll call Georgine. Georgine, they get a forever home. Even when she's able to get them taken care of, it costs about $250 a dog, which she pays for by herself. And she tries to get the dogs adopted out, but it's a poor community. So she has to adopt them out far beyond Doris. She has to adopt them out in Oregon and other places to get
them. Well, and I know that a lot of the officers on the marijuana eradication teams adopt the dogs.
Yes.
So after a while, though, I mean, yeah, everybody has dogs, like, and lots of them.
Hey, and if anybody wants a black lab, she has three beautiful black lab puppies that are 12 weeks old right now.
Oh, wow.
They are absolutely beautiful. Large paws. I looked at them. She's got two beautiful shepherds in there right now. And, yes, she has the pit bulls. But a lot of the dogs have PTSD, psychological injuries. They come in. They're emaciated. She fixes them. She does amazing things with them. So we've done a documentary with her, and it's coming, folks, and it's going to be great to be.
Yeah, keep us posted on that.
I'll post all that on the page today. I need the fundraising link. I've got it in my emails. I just need to sit down and do it.
Okay.
I'll post all that on here. So let's see. Today is the 25th of September, 2022. Just, you know, in case you want to go and take a look at that, because that's a worthwhile thing to support.
We're
going to be able to change everything, but
and we're going to try to do a work party, a one day work party to help her. She's a single female. You know, she's older. And she needs a lot of help.
She's spicy, too.
And she is spicy. She's really spicy. And she is a beautiful person. And we really judge our society.
Yeah. So we're going to gather up the troops and go up there.
She doesn't just put them to sleep.
No,
you know, which would be, and some of these dogs are in rugged, rugged conditions.
This is no kill
shelter.
Some
of their skin is partially peeled off. I mean, there's just some really, really just abuse at a level that you. So, you know, if you have people who still think pot's great, show them some of the pictures of the dogs,
and you
talk to them about that.
This is how they treat their dogs. So how do they treat their children?
Yeah, that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have to run away from home here, and we will chat with you folks on another day.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
All right, so you're listening to We the People. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
You can really try to do it smoking pot. Pot, pot, pot. Well, you can sing it in a song. You can smoke it in a bong. Smoking pot. Pot, pot, pot. Well, it's the latest sensation that's sweeping the nation. Smoking pot. Pot, pot, pot. Let's go. Let's go smoke some pot. Let's go smoke some pot. Let's go smoke some pot.